You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
New research has been released which found people who spend more of their lives in socioeconomically disadvantaged areas have a significantly higher risk of premature deaths of despair. These kinds of deaths include suicide, drug overdose, and alcohol-related diseases. The findings of the report suggest neighborhood effects frequently operate independently of individual level factors, indicating expanding public health beyond individual treatment to wider neighborhood care may be necessary to help those most in need. To discuss deprived areas linked to deaths of despair and how best to solve the issue, I talked to University of Auckland Social Sciences Professor Barry Milne. I started by asking Professor Milne to explain the methodology of the study.
What we did is we investigated whether neighbourhood deprivation was associated with deaths of despair. So deaths of despair are deaths from suicide, drug deaths and alcohol deaths. And we also investigated with whether neighbourhood deprivation was associated with a syndrome of despair at midlife. And that syndrome of despair are things that lead to deaths of despair. So suicidality, so thoughts of suicide, substance misuse, sleep problems and chronic pain. And we did this using two data sets. So we use the whole New Zealand population. So that's using a data source called the Integrated Data Infrastructure. We looked at 2.4 million people born between 1955 and 1994 and investigated their deaths of despair from 2015 to 2019. And amongst that group, there was 3,000 deaths of despair in that five-year time frame, which is about one in eight deaths for that age group. About 60% of those were suicide deaths, 20% of those were alcohol deaths, and 20% of those drug deaths. And what we found is that those who lived in more deprived neighbourhoods were more likely to experience a death of despair. So the more deprived your neighbourhood was, the more likely you were to have a death of despair. It wasn't explained by people's income, people's education, people's ethnicity, and a few other bits and pieces. We couldn't really control for what we might call selection effects. So is it something about the neighbourhood that raises people's risk of death or despair, or is it because people who have other characteristics that make them more likely to experience a death or despair are more likely to live in those neighbourhoods? So we then turned to a second data set, which was the Dunedin study, which you may have heard of. So that's a group of around 1,000 individuals who were born in Dunedin in 1972-73, and they've been followed up ever since. And what we found there is that more people who lived in the more deprived neighbourhoods had a greater, more of a syndrome of despair. So those are the things I was talking about before, that is sort of thoughts of suicide, substance misuse problems, sleep problems, and chronic pain. And moreover, what we're able to do there is rule out these selection effects. So it wasn't just the people who grew up in poor childhood or had physical and health, mental health problems themselves, who had low education or had more likely to have a family history of mental health. When we control for those things, you still see this association between the neighbourhood you live in and your syndrome of despair in that case. And moreover, whereas the age-related effect where people travel up through the socioeconomic gradient as they age, so you're more likely to live in better environments as you get older, but some people don't, those people who didn't were the ones who were at greatest risk of this syndrome of despair.
You mentioned the death of despair there, and you gave us a bit of an explanation. It's clearly quite important, and you found this link. Why was it you decided to focus on these kinds of deaths?
Okay, so the death of despair is a term that was coined, it's probably coined about 10 or 15 years ago, but it was coined to explain what was going on in the United States from the 1990s, where there was this increase in deaths in midlife. So the one thing that I should emphasize here, we're looking at people aged 25 to 64, so sort of working age individuals. And this was shown to, there was an increase in that in the United States from the 1990s onwards, coincided with the opioid epidemic. But it wasn't just opioids, it was also, that was a major part of the United States, but also suicides and alcohol deaths as well. And this was shown in the United States, and we, a few years ago, started to wonder, as others had, is this something that's specific to the United States? And we investigated in a previous study comparing New Zealand and Denmark and showed that there were deaths of despair in New Zealand that were associated with poorer living conditions. They, unlike the United States, they don't seem to have gone up, though. So it was a relatively stable number of deaths in New Zealand through deaths of despair, which, again, is the sort of suicide deaths, the drug deaths, the alcohol deaths.
So now we have this socioeconomic neighbourhood link to these deaths of despair. Does this suggest a more proactive and systematic approach to policy solutions for these kinds of deaths is important to implement rather than maybe a more reactive individual treatment?
I think that's certainly the case. I don't think you want to be reactive. One of the mechanisms that's been suggested for this, which there's a little bit of evidence but not much, is this kind of a fatalism amongst people who end up having a death of despair. So they're more likely to believe that there's little they can do to improve their situation. There's a real or perceived lack of opportunity, or in the neighbourhood sense, there's a community level sense of alienation from, you know, people who live in more advantaged situations. So if fatalism is that mechanism, then generally, forgetting about neighbourhood effects, improving socioeconomic prospects may help reduce that fatalism and its consequences. So that's a society level thing, that's an individual level thing. I think another implication is that when you're considering what you can do to reduce these deaths, aspects of the neighbourhood should be considered. There's some, small studies that have shown, causal studies that have shown that if you improve a neighbourhood, it can actually improve people's mental health. So they ran this study in Philadelphia where they had various empty lots around Philadelphia, and they randomly selected empty lots to either have nothing done to them or be cleaned up a little bit and tidied. And a third set of empty lots were randomized to be planted with trees and sort of had good upkeep. And what they found actually is the people who lived near the empty lots that were turned into sort of green areas had the biggest improvement in their mental health. So I think there are things that can be done.
With a current cost of living crisis going on and support for these deprived communities becoming somewhat rarer, do you worry that this issue could get worse?
I guess I am. I mean, things can change very quickly in New Zealand depending on what sort of policies are implemented. But it's certainly something to keep an eye on. As I say, if the mechanism is living in poor areas and leading on to fatalism or whatever the other mechanism is, then yes, if that goes on for long enough, then that could lead to a greater number of these deaths.
That was University of Auckland Social Sciences Professor Barry Milne speaking to me about the deprived areas linked to deaths of despair.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.